You say we don't know. We say we don't know. We say Drek This Out.
Hello and welcome to Trek This Out, your friendly neighborhood Star Trek podcast. This week, we're going to be discussing the slightly controversial, perhaps slightly silly, perhaps TNG episode Sub Rosa, aka the one with the ghost sex scandal. Do the crew think it's a later season filler, a horror show for the right or wrong reasons, or a cult classic? I'm your host, Andrea, and I'm joined on this away mission by candle enthusiast Deb.
Hey.
Highland laddie Drew.
Hey.
Deep fried Mars bar Suki.
I'll take that, I think.
And special guest and Beverly Crusher enthusiast and expert, Rebecca.
Hello.
Hello, welcome as our first-time guest, Rebecca. Could you just kick us off maybe by just telling us a little bit about your Star Trek story, how you come to be sitting on this podcast right now?
Well, let's see. I mean, as far as my being a fan of Star Trek, I started watching TNG with my dad when it started airing. What was that? 80 whatever long time ago, and I've just always been a fan, kind of in the background of fandom a bit until I moved to the UK and then met Deb and Andrea at a convention, and everything just seems to have taken off from there.
Hey, come on. You're blaming us. Who had the plastic Beverly?
To be fair, it's my fault. Actually, do you know what? You know whose fault it is? Terry's.
Yes.
Let's blame Terry.
Terry.
You were the one with the little Beverly Crusher and Picard dolls that were flirting with each other on the table.
They're here.
I'm sure there are.
They're in a bag. They go everywhere. They just haven't had any fun. But you know.
Well, please send us a photo of them at Duxford tomorrow so we can put it on our Twitter feed.
Mini Bev and Mini Picard have been on many adventures.
Yes.
And I think you're an ideal guest to talk about Sub Rosa. One, because I know you're a huge fan of Gates. And two, I think that most people in this podcast right now have sat at a bar, particularly at a Star Trek convention, and had cheap laughs at the expense of Sub Rosa. So
Definitely.
It holds a special place.
I mean, I do have the 3D printed candle.
That everybody needs. So let's start thinking about this episode then, because I think people are going to have plenty to say. So let's go around and just get our initial thoughts, just our brief kind of vibes on, do we like it, do we love it, do we hate it? I'm going to go to Drew, because I don't know what Drew's going to say.
Well, I really enjoyed it. It was a controversial opinion. I've seen it lots of times. I watched it twice specifically for the podcast. It's a big smile on my face while I was watching it. It's hilariously bad, I would say. It's a fun episode.
Deb?
Well, I did have a bit of a discussion, which we'll read later, from someone on Twitter that was making some quite serious observations about the episode and making me look at it a slightly differently. So I rewatched, and the conclusion was it is complete shit. I love it.
Becca is our guest.
Okay, it is complete shit, but it's also ridiculous at times. And I think that when you think about it in the context of it having been made in the mid-90s, it's not that bad, is it? Some things. So I still like it, even though it is problematic.
Suki, what's your initial vibe?
Right. I have not seen this since 1994, when it was first shown. So I can't remember too much about it, except for everybody going on about the sex scandal. And now that's sort of coloured my view on it to such a degree. So when I've come to rewatch it, and I thought, this is going to be terrible. It's going to be really, really bad. But actually, it's fun in a silly, silly, silly way. And I quite enjoyed it, especially Gates McFadden's performance, because she really goes into it, especially some of the sexual scenes where she's lying around. So, yeah, I'm going to say it's enjoyable. How come? Go on, Andrew, what do you think?
It's an odd one because I have a sort of, because I probably associate it with other memories, which were quite good times. I think I probably look at it like in a particular way. I know what Deb's saying about some people having a slightly different take on it. My problem with it, it isn't necessarily to do with it as an episode in isolation, but more a wider problem about characters in TNG, which I'm sure we'll come on to later. So I don't know, is it so bad it's good? Maybe, just maybe. I'm a bit on the fence on that one, but I do have affection for it. So now we've got those initial thoughts.
Is this a good time for Becca to tell us about the photo with Gates?
Hold on. She's actually taken about 10 minutes to interrupt somebody. You know, we've been recording for quite a while now, and she hasn't interrupted anybody except it's right now.
Habit.
Where is this favouritism towards Andrew? When me and Drew do start an episode, it's always interrupt, interrupt, interrupt. Andrea does it now. She won't say a word, will you?
And this is Andrea's special week.
Good grief.
Right, you're all fucking interrupting me now, so shut up. Right, we've had a think about our initial thoughts. Let's have a bit more of a deep dive into this episode. And I want to kick us off with our thoughts on Space Scotland. An unusual choice for a sort of theme park sort of colony. Someone's obviously come back from a trip to Scotland and thought, oh, let's make a Scotland planet. I'm not sure how accurate that is. Any thoughts on our four Scottish setting?
It was like, how do you know it's Scottish? Oh, well, straight off, you see someone with tartan over their shoulder. Then as they walk away, there's a couple of people with Tamu shanters on their heads. Then they refer to, I hope it stays dry for the caber toss. And it's kind of like somebody once read a book about Scotland and took out all the stereotypes. I was just waiting to turn around to see the guy drinking Buckfast on the side of the road and the shop with battered Mars bars and iron brew, really. Interestingly, the guy with the dodgy... Great, I interrupted Suki. The guy with the dodgy Scottish accent, Ned, was actually Irish.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? Because it starts off with the funeral, doesn't it? And straight away, it's like, you know, in our time, you can have like a priest or a rabbi or a humanist. But on planet Scotland, you can have like a half pig man with flock of seagulls haircut officiating the funeral, can't you? So that's just one good thing that I thought that planet Scotland's got going for it.
Yeah, I didn't mind the Scotland setting because there's got to be hundreds and hundreds of planets out there that have been terraformed or, you know, whatever, moulded into whatever ideas that they decided they want for their planets. And I didn't mind that at all. But I do think it was probably an afterthought for this episode. They probably thought, we've got this romantic candle story. We need to give it a setting. We'll make it Scotland, but we don't want to set it on Scotland. In Scotland, we'll make it on another planet. And we'll just give all the Scottish things in there to just give it a bit of taste.
I was just going to say, I feel like when Jean-Luc asks for the tour, I feel like the end of the tour is like an Edinburgh Woolen Mill gift shop. I feel like, you know, that's like, it's like the Scottish Tourist Board have said there has to be an Edinburgh Woolen Mill gift shop where you can buy various tartan accessories.
Right. Well, first I've got something to say, and then Tim wants to know if he can say something about this.
Of course.
Of course you can. We have to introduce
okay, so
him.
As the token American here, watching it originally and also in the 90s in the States, like, that's what people thought Scotland was. Like, legitimately, I would have people who would go, they would mispronounce Edinburgh. I'm going to Edinburgh. And they would bring home the tartans, you know, look at my plaid blanket, you know, and the scarves. And it was just that's what they thought, you know, Scotland was. So it's not surprising that that's how it translated onto the screen. And then, as I say, then Tim had a comment. He was like, can I make a comment?
Yeah.
Hey, Tim.
Hey.
Because you look at the sort of a community that's got like a common ethnicity and culture. And then he's transplanted thousands of miles, or thousands of light years in this case, from home. Two ways it can go. Either they exaggerate going native, or they become an exaggerated caricature of themselves. I mean, look at the British Empire in India. On the one hand, you'd find, Eton schoolboys who became Oxford graduates, you know, becoming vegetarian and wearing dhotis and totally going native. On the other hand, you go to the hill stations like Darjeeling and Uttarakhand and places like that, and it's like Guildford, only warmer. The architecture is British, the church is British. You know, it's like, you know, the waiters will glare at you if you use the wrong spoon to stir your tea. It's almost like it's what Americans imagine Britain is like, only worse. So I can quite see somebody playing hard into their own cultural stereotypes just as a way to keep a link for home. So it's ridiculous, but it's a human and a believable kind of ridiculous.
So come on the show more often. That's far more intelligent than anything I've ever said.
So it's very highbrow for us.
He's taking over the podcast, Becca. Just let him go, please. We don't need him for this episode. He'll come back for his own episode.
Oh, he's gone to his corner with his cup of tea.
Oh, bless. Lovely. Yeah. Fantastic.
He's welcome to come back. Just stop, not to be so intelligent next time and show the rest of yourself.
That's kind of hard. You have met him.
Yeah.
But the thing you just said as well, Becca, is, this is what American Scotland was. I've just had a quick Google while Tim was talking. Braveheart and Rob Roy. Right, I thought may have come out just before, but they didn't, because this was shown in January 94 and Rob Roy and Braveheart came out a year and a half later. So all these, maybe those two productions actually took information from this Star Trek episode and decided we'll go with this version of Scotland. And that's how they made Liam Neeson and Mel Gibson versions of Scotland.
I was just going to say, I think one of my favourite bits is it's like, oh yeah, it's just like the Highlands. This came from Glasgow. And it's like, Patrick Stewart must know there's an issue with that line. And he's just like, yeah, I can just roll with this. Like, you know, I talk shit on this show every week. I can run with this. It's fine.
The other two towns he mentioned was Aberdeen and what was the other one? Edinburgh?
Yeah.
Glasgow, Edinburgh, and they're all industrial towns. They're nowhere near the Highlands, are they? Anyway, go on, Deb.
Thank you. Apparently it was based on a book, a gothic ghost story. And I didn't follow that through to find out what the story was, but it may well be that the Scottish setting was because of the original story. It may not be, but I just thought I'd say it anyway. I'm trying to sound clever, but I can't be Tim, can I?
You've never sounded clever, babe.
So mean.
I know. Well, this is it. I need to get the red shirt thing in right now before.
You know, I'm not going to red shirt you.
You can't. No. Don't go around telling everybody what you're thinking right now.
I'm not going to red shirt
you. I'm going to make sure you red shirt me by the end of this episode.
No, because you're trying too hard.
It was inspired by Anne Rice's The Witching Hour.
I think I'm too.
What was it?
Now, there was another book.
Again, I've done a bit of research as well. Sorry. But there's. The writers, Brannon Braga, Jerry Taylor, and the person that actually put the pitch to it, they've all said they hadn't read or heard of, or were aware of, I should say, The Witching Hour. And then they're more on about another story called the Nurse and the Screw, or something like that.
Oh, the something screw, yeah. The Turn of the Screw.
Right, and so they were. That's what, because again, a couple of the characters' names are from that story rather than The Witching Hour. Just drop some information there for you guys anyway.
So I think it's kind of, I think we've kind of covered Space Scotland. I think we're kind of moving on to the main kind of themes in this. And I suppose that's the thing. There's that kind of idea that's been inspired by Gothic horror, but I'm not quite sure whether its delivery has ended up being far more comical, I think, than sinister. Is it any sillier than Deanna turning into a cake? We've seen plenty of silly things in Star Trek, but it does have a bit of a reputation. But as Deb kind of said, some of the comments have kind of alluded to a darker theme than I think maybe I've ever picked up on, and I don't know what people's thoughts are on kind of like what's it trying to be and how well does it achieve that.
Yeah, I think it's trying to be a 90s 45 minutes worth of prime time American entertainment, isn't it? I saw them comments as well, and I've never picked up on that stuff either, about it's a story of abuse and addiction and things like that. I mean, I wouldn't want to say to, especially because they was coming from women, and as a man, I wouldn't want to say you're wrong in any respect. But I've never seen that. I just think it's light and fluffy, and I mean, Gates McFadden is proud of it, and you know, she's a woman. I don't think that's what was being intended, you know, to be go for. I think it was just light, fluffy entertainment.
Yeah, I think Becca will have a comment on what Gates has said about it. She's our Gates expert.
I better find something.
I think her opinion's changed recently, but if you know anything about the podcast that she did, where she had to explain to Kat Mulgrew what the plot was. I haven't heard it, but it sounds hysterical. Yeah, I mean, so I thought about that because I was responding to the messages that people saw this as a sign of oppression and abuse. And I think it could have been. But the reason when I rewatched it, particularly sort of thinking, what do I think? I think it's a valid point if people see that. But I think it's too clumsily written because it's a 45-minute program. They're trying to put in something about weird weather at the same time. They're trying to make a sci-fi element of it. The fact that it all happened so quickly that a very bright, intelligent, all-rounded character of Beverly Crusher could be seduced by this spirit so quickly. And the way that she responded to that, we have Star Trek now, which is much better written, and there's much more diversity in the writing in the background. But we have a male writer, much as we love Jonathan Frakes, you have a male director, and it was just clumsy. So the bit that I did find a bit gobsmacking was at the end, where it's like, yeah, my nana, she lived till she was 100. She was controlled by this ghost, but it made her happy. And I just thought, what the fuck, really? I mean, that was very blasé. So,
well, she was happy. She's a 100-year-old shagging a 30-year-old, wasn't she? who wouldn't be happy at that age?
But there is more to women than getting good orgasms, and they clearly were. And the fact that on the first night she's in her nana's bed, she's reading her diary, and then she goes and talks to Diana, saying, well, I had a great orgasm last night reading me grand's. It's kind of, you know, shut up, you know. I'm sure they're very close, but that's not, I wouldn't even tell Andrea.
Her to read two entries.
Actually, I've read some of the fanfic. Yes, she did. Yeah.
Better read two.
Went to watch this episode. I'd read some of the comments, especially the stuff that Deb was interacting with one of our correspondents. And the addiction bit was the one that sort of, when I watched it, I thought, yeah, that does look like addiction. Because the way she acted when she brought the candle onto the ship, it looked like a person that's addicted to whatever was being emanated from that candle, and she wanted more of it. So that's the addiction. I did see that. The abuse bit, I did see, and I don't know, maybe it's because, as Drew says, it's because I'm a bloke and I never saw that. I'm going to have to leave that with you guys, but I never saw the abuse bit. But at the end, where she goes, she's been happy all this time, again, it's just... it just didn't come across as good writing to me. Hearing that bit of explanation right at the end, where Beverly just goes, and Nana was happy, and I just thinking, no.
Can I just clarify before? Sorry, it is Becca's turn. I'm not saying it wasn't abusive, but I just you know, there is a woman getting controlled. It was just really badly written.
It was manipulative, which can for some women be triggering as a form of abuse. I don't think there was obviously no physical abuse because Beverly never got physically harmed, but there was definitely emotional abuse and even to a degree sexual abuse if you consider the fact that the gaseous ghost was giving her orgasms. Abuse? I don't know. But Deb asked about Gates's opinion on it. And I really quickly had a quick look. And when she did her own podcast and had to explain it to Kate, she was apparently talking to, there was another interview that she did shortly after that. And they asked her, like, was that awkward explaining it? And Gates said, I think it's fun. And she says, what's great is how my evolution on the episode has been, because I now think it's hilarious. And that's something that I remember is that she used to hate the episode. She absolutely hated it. She hated talking about it. And then I would say sort of within the past like five, 10 years, it's become more of a humorous thing to her. Of course, because us as the fans, we kind of grasped onto it and make it silly. But she really hated it at first as well. So I can't remember specifically why, but I just remember that she really didn't like it either.
It is addiction, isn't it? Because at the end, Bev says it's the anaphasic energy that's been infusing her, isn't it? And like you said, Suki, that bit when she's back in the Enterprise with the candle, she's still twitching and she's definitely got some kind of withdrawal looks to it. So it is an addiction, isn't it? I thought that is what the end of it is kind of saying. Because the other thing I think about this is Bev's never acting like rationally, is she? Or she isn't once she gets the anaphasic energy in it. I like Picard's bit when she hands in a notice and he goes to the transport room and he says, you know, what the hell is this? And then afterwards, when he's discussing it with Troy and he says, you know, it's the decisions is rash and ill-conceived. She's definitely not acting like Beverly normally does. Is she? So that, I think, is part of the addiction. And as my wife pointed out when we was watching that bit, surely Bev should have given 3 months' notice anyway as senior staff, shouldn't she?
I'm not going to lie. I feel like the episode kind of extra jumps the shark when they reanimate Nana's corpse. I feel like that was probably a mistake that kind of like unravels any sort of attempt at drama. But I think that one of the things that, you know, I mentioned sort of my problem with the episode is I kind of feel that for a lot of Star Trek in that era, female characters weren't that well served and didn't get the spotlight very often. And it's like, right, we're going to give Beverly a sort of Beverly-centric episode that's going to be all about her character. And that's what they gave her. And I kind of feel like she could have given us so much more. And even if you look at sort of other doctor characters, you know, they might have had a kind of medicine-centered episode where they kind of go to a colony and try to fix a problem, but no, they gave her a horny candle, and it's a bit of a theme, isn't it? Like, sort of, we're going to have a space entity and a female character, so it's going to come and bother her at bedtime. They did it with Deanna. It was just like, it feels a bit of like, we don't know what to do with this woman, so like, let's do the obvious thing. And I think in a lot of ways that I'm sure Becca's kind of knows every Bev episode better than me, but I feel like she kind of, if that was her kind of in the season, her sort of central character moment, it she deserved a little bit better than that. And if it was a kind of a sideline filler, then okay, but I don't think she got enough screen time and enough of those episodes for it to kind of go, oh well, it's all right, you can do a silly one as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can go on for ages about the ending several seasons of TNG and how it very quickly turned into the Picard, Riker, and Worf show. I'm sorry, Picard, Riker, and Data show with a little bit of Worf. And the rest of the crew, forget it. You know, Geordi, okay, he had a couple of things, but not really. Bev, Deanna, nope. Like, hey, guess what? We're going to give you love interests and they're always going to suck. We're going to give you a lot, and they're always going to be bad, or they're going to be you know, something stupid's going to happen, like the host or the one, I can't remember the episode, but with Deanna and the one that was another Betazoid and all that, and or the one that impregnate, the random spirit will impregnate you. You know, you can't have a serious episode because you're a woman. But that has to, that's has to do with a lot of TNG production, and I don't think anyone wants to get into that. But I was going to respond to Drew when he was talking about Beverly changing and things, and that's also something that if you'll notice as you watch the episode, her night clothes get sexier and more revealing as the episode goes on. She starts in a granny nighty, you know, long high neck, long sleeve, and she ends in like this sexy silky thing. True, although Andrea just popped her head.
Yeah, I think Andrea's got something to add to that.
I'm not going to lie, I have written, is Beverly wearing Nana's nightie or has she beaten Marks and Spencer's
panties? Yeah.
It doesn't seem like the nightie of a chic young woman, I've got to be honest. And I think particularly as Gates is such a stylish individual, it was like, who picked out that granny nightie for her? Like, nobody of that age group in any time period would like voluntarily wear that horrible nightie. So yeah, I think a nightwear probably improved from my point of view.
Yeah, I just wanted to pick up, you said about the bit about animating Nana's corpse. It's such a good bit that is. It's like, because the bit before that is when Picard goes to the house. Another great Picard bit, which I'd like to talk about later. But when Ronan appears to him, and that's when Data and Geordi buzz Picard and say, oh, we'd like to exhume the grave. And Ronan's like, you cannot do that. You cannot desecrate the grave. And then next minute, it's like Weekend at Bernie's 3, Nana's Revenge, isn't it? She's like dancing around and force lightning Geordi and Data. It's like, such a hilarious moment.
Granny Palpatine.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think what Andrea said was spot on. It is, I was trying to explain, you know, it's badly written women, you know, yet again, that they don't know how to write for women. And it's just makes me marvel about what great Star Trek we've got at the moment with obviously the diverse writing. And I think we've all grown. Is fine because it's Deanna as well. They create a character that is supposed to be empathic and then realize that they can't fit her to any of these stories. Like she's saying to the Beverly, you know, well, you can't lie to me. And you're thinking, well, clearly she is because you haven't the faintest idea what's going on.
Which she does pick up occasionally.
Yeah. And also, the other thing that made me laugh was how, because it's a family show, they can't actually use the word orgasm. So I was making a note. So it's when joining to become one, and all the terms that's used. She's attracted to Ronan in a very intense and intimate way. Her dreams are very physical. Oh no, it was a very physical dream. That's what I said. It was extremely arousing. It knew how I like to be touched. You know, that they can't possibly...
You're getting very hot and sweaty on this podcast at the moment. I need to cool down. Oh, dear. Oh.
And then, yeah, the bit when she was sort of in withdrawal, but also when she was wandering around the house for some strange reason. I can't work out why she was wandering around the house because... Maybe it's just they bought the set and fit it, and then they thought, well, we better use it. But she's wandering around it, becoming intensely aroused. Poor Gates, really. I'm also very worried that, Becca, you said it was only 5 years ago that Gates accepted the episode. How long ago did we do the photo with her?
I'm sure it was probably right around that time. I
think it was that that pushed her over, I really think.
But I know there was a lot around that time period where there were a lot of Sub Rosa cosplay, not just our group, but at other conventions, like in the States and stuff. So I think she did that, I think, was kind of like the turning point for her when she realized, like, oh, people like this. Okay.
Did they have a gravestone?
No, I think we're probably the only group that had a gravestone.
Before Drew just jumps in, could I ask your cosplay? Now, yeah. Was it cosplay in the uniform? Or was it in the granny nightwear?
Oh, no, it was all in granny nightwear.
Oh yes.
There were there five of us, Deb? That did it. I mean, originally we were just a really big group, but not everybody. Some people cosplayed and didn't do the photo with Gates, but like we had an assortment. Like I had the granny nightgown on. Jen had a short nightie on. I think Deb, you had the dressing gown.
And the nightie.
And the nightie. And then we had like green gauze, what's that stuff called? Tulle, to be like the ghost that we wrapped around us. And then Jen made a giant gravestone that was Felisa Howard that somebody was wearing for the picture. And when we walked in for the picture, Gates just looked at us and she was like, "I don't know you."
And I had we had the candles as
yes,
well.
And we had the candles. We all had candles. Like I had a 3D printed one, and then other people had like the beer stein style, like the old pint glass.
Yeah, I had a dimpled pint glass with
it. Because it kind of worked. And then we just had like little battery candles inside to be the candles.
Well, what you can do then, because I think Deb has sent it to me, but if one of you send it to me again, I'll use that as a photo for when I release a podcast.
We all had our own taken, and to be fair, she gave us our own individual photographs in a sense.
Yeah.
She highlighted each of us. So I've got one of her pointing to me, and that's the only one I've got. But she made sure that we all had our own individual photos.
And find one. I might have mine on my phone.
We'll use one of them as the thing for the podcast when I release the podcast.
They are not flattering.
That's all right.
They are really ridiculous.
Well, if you don't want to use it, I've got the one
care.
That I did do.
I don't mind, and I know that Jen wouldn't mind, so
that's all right. We'll do that then. We'll send one of you send the photo again. Drew.
Yeah, actually, talking of candles, is it time to light my green candle? There we go.
You might want to be careful.
Yeah, don't start orgasming. Yeah.
No, I'll try not to. This episode has got
all over the camera.
This episode has got so many ick factors to it, hasn't it? You mentioned one earlier, Andrew. The fact that Bev gets to the house and immediately starts reading Nana's sex diaries, doesn't she? And then she starts telling Picard and Troy and that lot. And then later on, the fact that when she's telling Troy, Troy says, "Oh, you're going out with someone." And she says, "Oh, yeah, it's actually Nana's old lover." And Troy's face is a picture there, you know. The thing is, with these erotic diaries, because that's how she describes it, isn't she? She says, is it a particularly erotic chapter that she was reading last night?
Arousing.
Yeah, what is Nana writing here? I'm imagining some kind of like Barbara Cartland kind of, you know, my sex was throbbing when he got out his giant manhood or whatever. It's just, there's so much ick to this episode. It's just a cringe fest. But I think that's one of the things that makes it good as well. It makes you smile, if nothing else.
So I think we've kind of covered that a little bit. The other one I wanted to kind of pick up on is I think kind of as that sort of things that run through TNG. Does this episode give us anything about the sort of Picard-Beverly relationship? Because I feel like he's very quick to be like, "I'm going down to the planet." And she's like, "Oh, it doesn't suit you being jealous." And it's like, I'm thinking, well, you love it, really. So I think there are little kind of allusions to that relationship in this one.
Yeah, there definitely is. Yeah, while it might not be a good episode for Bev, I think it's a great episode for Picard. He's not in it a lot, but the bits he is in it are really good. And just before I do get onto that, actually talking about good episodes for Bev, and also one which I think shows one part of it, how much love there is between Picard and Bev, and that's Remember Me. I mean, that is a good Bev episode, which we must do. It's one of my favourite episodes of TNG, actually. But yeah, Picard's got really good bits. And yeah, that's a good point, because he immediately knows that Bev isn't acting rationally. And then when he goes down to the house and he turns on the Picard charm, what did he say? He said something about, "Oh, I'm really eager to meet this man that's swept not one but two Howard women off their feet." You know, he's good in this, Picard.
Well, I was going to say, also, you have to remember, too, that in terms of the like timeline, the episode Attached was only several episodes before this one. So, like, Bev and Picard were linked, you know, they could read each other's thoughts. And you have to wonder, like, did some of that linger? Like, you know, so when he was, you know, was he doing this because he'd intimately known her brain and he knew that, like, this isn't right. This isn't how you act. This isn't what the way you think, you know, and so that I think also we kind of have to think about a little bit. But in terms of them being obviously, I love the idea of them being together. That's not a surprise. And I do think that in this episode, he very much is the, in a way, the jilted lover, because he's almost like, what are you doing? You're leaving. Why are you leaving? And then he goes down to the planet and it's like, why? She's left. You know, like, would you do that? I mean, I know he did it because they're friends and he wanted to know how she was doing and all that. But, you know, at the same time, you're just like, but if she left, what was your reason for showing up? And then you were asking about what he said. I've got the script up. He says, you know, he startled her. He's like, I'm sorry, I startled you. I knocked. And then he says, I'm anxious to meet this remarkable young man who swept away not just one, but two of the Howard women. And then she comments on his jealousy and he doesn't respond to that. But he does tell her that he likes the way she was before, because her eye color changes. And he says, I preferred your eyes they were before, which I think is very interesting, you know. And then he goes on to be like, nope, something's wrong here. And I do think that that definitely shows that he cares about her as more than a friend, you know. I mean, if it was just your friend, you'd probably be like, okay, this is really dumb, but if that's what makes you happy. But I think he is showing a bit more love and care for her. And I don't know which one of you had your hand up first, so take Rudy. A pick.
You're saying Picard, he doesn't knock. That of course, is right after or even at the end of the scene, isn't it?
He has to have seen that happen.
Yeah. It's the scene, the one where she's making love to a ghost, isn't she? Ronan is dipping his wick in the Bev. You know, that is the scene, isn't it? Why doesn't he knock? That's really bad of Picard there.
He doesn't knock. He just walks right in and she's in the throes of passion.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say, was the fact that he just walks in and she's really having a good time and he looks and then carries on going in as if to go, what the hell? Should I just pull out my phone?
I want some of that. Let me
what are you going to say? He's going to get his phone out, Suki.
I don't know. Like a recorder or whatever. I'll save this for later.
His tricorder out.
Now we've established that Jean-Luc Picard is in fact a bit of a peeping Tom. I suppose the other characters who get sort of a little bit of a look in this, the kind of it's as close as we get to a B plot in this one. He is kind of Geordi and Data fixing the weather. And I find it quite interesting that, like, nobody notices that one, that the clouds are green, which I'm not entirely sure what kind of weather system, no matter what you did on the planet, would produce luminous green clouds. That seems to kind of just go by the wayside. And then you get the sort of Scotch mist filling the Enterprise engineering section. So I suppose they get a little bit of a sideline in the story. So I suppose they might be worth a bit of a mention.
Yeah, and Riker, he gets about two lines in this, isn't he? I guess he's glad that he got paid for it, though. Because the Enterprise is getting it because they got that beam, haven't they? And as always, whenever they do some kind of transfer, there's a feedback loop, isn't there? Every single time the Enterprise does this, there's a feedback loop. I was just like, why don't they just fly away from the planet? That would have stopped the beam, wouldn't it? Or is it just me? Is that too simple to come up with?
The other visual on that, with that all that feedback, was the fact that the fog, that was actually quite a nice touch. I didn't mind having seen the fog on the bridge. It was quite eerie. That it just darkened the light a bit. It would have been really spooky in there, just to fit in with everything.
Nobody seemed all that bothered, do you? I just got off the bridge. Oh, there's a bit of fog on.
I'll go fetch my couch.
I've got fog on the bridge. It's all mine, all mine. Fog on the bridge. It's all...
No, Deb, no.
But you got, I just love Linda Swan. But also, I mean, saying when, you know, why don't they get away from the planet? You've also got Ronan, who decides to, he's going to do a zip wire up the connection link why didn't he just jump into Beverly or the candle and get carried on? But no, he's just got to show off. I mean, this is why you can tell it's men, isn't it? That's the way, you know, why take the simple
Beverly
route?
Had to give him permission to be like in her. That sounds so gross.
To get his wick in.
I don't think like he could have just taken over her body and gone back to the Enterprise. I think there had to have been some kind of acceptance on her part.
But he had the candle.
I feel like by the end they were almost there.
She could have gone in the candle. He could have nipped in the candle and been carried on.
But going to that scene where she's nearly there, it's the fact that he turns on Picard and nearly kills him with it, that her training kicks in. She's a doctor. She's got to help Picard. And then maybe something else triggers into her head, thinking, I'm actually being controlled here. Yeah, manipulated abuse. Yeah, manipulated. She's actually being controlled by this Ronan character. So this is where she starts to rebel, reject this Ronan character.
Yeah, you're talking about that bit. Yeah, poor old Quint. Yeah. He gets like lightning, does he? Green lightning, and just dies. And they just go, oh, he's dead. Like they put these things on his neck. No, normally you'd be like beaming to the Enterprise trying to resuscitate him, wouldn't they, or something? But they're just like, ah, he's a side character. We won't worry about any of that. But yeah, so when Picard gets it, yes, Bev does kick into action. The bit just before that, because you said Ronan did it, it's one of the great scenes of it, I think. Picard's analytical mind, because he goes down there to try and confront and find out what's going on with Ronan. And I love his whole line once Ronan's there. You know, he just immediately gets on it and he starts saying, you know, like, how long have you lived here? How did you get here? What ship did you go on? Who are your neighbours? What's your position? It's just, I love that. Picard using logic to try and work out what is going on here. It's a great bit for Picard.
I mean, that's exactly it. You have to have a man to come and rescue because the poor weak woman has been manipulated and molested by a candle and a bit of green mist. But yeah, I was going to say exactly the same about Ned Quinn is... you know, he's like Frasier, isn't he, off Dad's army, just going around, we're moved, we're doomed. It was almost like they thought, fuck for that when he died. And they didn't really get an issue. You know, did they not do CPR? Did they not have any tri recorders or anything? It was just, I think they were, oh, good. Get rid of him then. His Scottish accent was a bit shit and all he did was whinge all the time.
How did this Ned Quinn know what was going on? How long has he actually known? Right, has he been doing a Jean-Luc Picard and peeping through the windows and doors and seeing what's going on? So he knows that this candle is corrupting Felicia. Right, so I just wondered how long he's known and why didn't he do anything before?
I'm almost positive that Ned had a thing for Nana. Because of the way that he talks about Felicia, the way that he says to Beverly that candle was bad news for her as soon as she had it. You know, I really got the feeling that Ned was, you know, definitely in love with Felicia. And that's why he was so concerned about Beverly then having the same problems that her grandmother had.
Yeah, so I think we've covered most aspects. So I think if we just go around and if anybody's got anything else to add. I've got a couple of very, very random free, and to be honest, my notes are probably the most random selection of notes I've ever had. The other grave in the graveyard says McFly, which I wondered if someone had put a little Back to the Future reference in there.
And there was Vader as well.
Yeah.
And Vader as well.
I didn't catch that one. So someone's had a bit of fun fashioning the gravestones there. I don't feel like the podcast can go without someone saying "dinner light that candle." That's an iconic line.
I don't have the right accent for it.
it's kind of, where's Lindsay when we need it? I definitely wouldn't want to read Nana's diary about her exciting sex life.
Haven't you got an equivalent somewhere written up, I wonder, Andrea? Haven't you got an equivalent somewhere written up, you know, somewhere quite similar? Fanfic.
Well, no
comment. Oh, oh, put it in her head now. She's going to come
gonna
up
go hide. Excuse me.
Nana didn't
go hide.
You know, I think there might be more than one of us in this podcast who's written some interesting fanfic, but it's not about me nan's sex life, so I feel the other thing I've noticed is that people have an interesting take on stuff in the future. So Beverly's like leaving her life on that ship that she's been on for years with like an, all her worldly possessions are in that poxy little handbag. Like, do people not have things? Like, you could fit three pairs of knickers and like a toothbrush in that bag she took with her. Like, where's all the shit? And I think Nana's house is quite interesting as well, because it had that weedy little like, and that 80s looking computer screen, but basically it looks like an advert for Durham Pine in the 90s, which if you're not of a certain age and UK based probably doesn't mean anything, possibly if you're not from the northeast, but Pine was a big thing in the 90s, and Nana's clearly clung on to that look because everything was yellow pine. So that's my random selection of observations. Has anybody got anything else that they want to share about the episode?
Yeah, so talking about Nana's house, the bit where before, like, Bev's knows that Ronan's about, when she goes in and all the flowers are there, and then the mirror starts moving and she goes up to, and it falls off the wall and she picks it up and she sees Ronan's face and she quickly turns around and Ronan's not there. I mean, you'd literally be going Enterprise One to beam up immediately,
Empire!
Wouldn't you? You'd just be like, it reminds me of that Eddie Murphy bit about is it The Omen or whatever, you know, the Amityville, you know, if you heard in your house, get out, you'd be like, I'm leaving, I'm moving out today, wouldn't you? He's like, that's seriously scary stuff.
Now, this is sort of like a forgettable episode, really, if it wasn't that bad, like, it would have just been a forgettable episode. But I think because the cast have all said really derogatory things about it. I mean, Michael Dorman, in the 4 or 5 websites that I actually went to research this episode, there's a quote from Michael Dorman and that he hated this episode back in the 1990s. Each one of these websites. So maybe the fan...
He's barely in it.
Yeah. Well, he's probably what, because he, you know how some actors don't like seeing themselves on their shows. Maybe because he watched this episode, because he's hardly in it, he thought, okay, this is
fair. If he sat in makeup for 3 hours for them, like a 2-minute scene,
yeah,
probably hate it.
There's the actress that played Felisa, Ellen.
Can I just jump in before you go into that bit, Suki? Yeah. You're saying it's a forgettable episode, but I don't think this is a forgettable episode at all. I think it's a memorable episode. And I think this is why it's not... People were saying, oh, it's the worst episode of TNG, but it's not. You know, entertainment is about entertaining you. And boring, forgettable episodes. Like, I always... that episode, Aquiel, that's a Geordie one, where he's got to investigate someone who's been murdered and he falls in love with her. It's a terrible episode. And it's a terrible episode because you just forget about it. The amount of people I mention that to and they go, don't remember that episode at all. But no one says that about Sub Rosa.
What was that? What was one of the masks? That one was pretty...
Oh, yeah, it's called Mask, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's loads of season one forgettable ones. This isn't a forgettable episode
what
at all.
Okay, what I meant was it would have been a forgettable episode. It would have been a forgettable episode. But because fan cast and crew have all said it's a really terrible episode, fans have watched it and they've gone on to commenting on it. So it's stayed in the memory. Now, if they'd have just left it anything, you know, not made comments on these cast and crew, this would have been a forgettable episode. But because they've all said something, the fans have all gone onto this episode, so it stayed in the memory.
I don't know, how could you possibly forget the image of Beverly having a orgasm
exactly
to absolutely nothing and Picard moving in? I don't know what goes in your life that makes this pale into insignificance, but that image was ingrained into my head. I could never have forgotten it.
Well, I've forgotten it from 1994. Sorry. I think Becca had her
answer. I mean, coming off that, Deb, but can we just say how amazing Gates was because she literally acted to nothing? You know, she just acted. And I think that she needs, there needs to be some credit in there that just goes into her incredible acting skills, that she made it believable. Like, yeah, it was ridiculous, but she made it believable when she was there on a set surrounded probably by all men who were like, okay, we need you to fake an orgasm right now.
I probably first saw this episode when I was about, I want to say 11, and I probably knew enough about what the episode was about without probably fully comprehending what some of it was like alluding to, and I kind of remembered it. I can remember watching TNG a long time and I'm thinking, I remember this, and I don't know if it was just because it was Ghost or because I remembered that it was in Scotland, but there was some, and there's lots of episodes that I've watched even recently, I thought, bloody hell, I don't remember this. Like, this is like a bit of a blank, but that I did remember. And there were certain episodes, I think, that kind of, like, years later, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I remember this. I remember seeing this. So you'd be flicking through the channels and it'd be on something. You'd be like, oh, I remember this one. And some that I just completely got. And that did, I did remember the Scottish candle-y thing, even if I couldn't fill in the gaps. It was familiar, I think, when I came and watched it again quite a long time later. So there must be something about it that sticks in your mind. I don't know if it's just, it kind of sticks out as an odd episode of Next Generation. Because typically an episode of Next Generation's got lots of wandering around the ship, and there isn't really very much. It's kind of, I don't know if it was that maybe, but yeah, it did kind of stick.
See, as I says, this is the first time I watched it was 94, and then the next time I watched it was actually today, which is about 2 hours ago, before we started recording. Now, I couldn't remember anything from the episode. The only things I could remember is when I joined the podcast, when we started the podcast, Andrea, there was always little references between some of you about Sub Rosa, the candle, and stuff like that, peppered through some of the episodes. And so that's the only references I had. So I couldn't remember it. It's when I came to this episode, I still couldn't remember it from 94 or specifics. I only know it's the sexy candle episode, and that's it.
I'm probably going to get blasted by people listening for saying this, but Sub Rosa is actually like one of my comfort episodes. Like, if I'm having a bad day or just need something, I watch Sub Rosa, I watch Remember Me, I watch Attack, like I just watch all of the Beverly centric episodes, and that includes this one. So I mean, I'm sure someone's gonna be like, oh my god, I can't believe, but like, so I've probably seen it hundreds of times. Which is probably,
has Tim got any final points?
Tim, do you have anything to say about Sub Rosa?
Well, I mean, as you know,
show them your pretty face.
Oh, look at that pretty face.
I suppose at the end of the day, it's always difficult. All broadcast or big screen sci-fi has the same problem. It's the 90-10, isn't it? We're the 10 who love it in all its details. But at the end of the day, if the studios are going to keep going and keep making it, they have to make it for the 90% who just need to be entertained for an hour. So sometimes it's just, you know, just the price we have to pay. And it's not too bad. It was entertaining, wasn't it, if nothing else? I mean, at the time, I mean, maybe if we look at it with hindsight, you know, 30 years down the road, then hopefully society's grown up a little bit more since then. A little bit.
They wouldn't make an episode with Michael and a space ghost candle.
No. Thank I like too. That they tried something different, though.
I'm curious as to whether or not they would do something like that with a male character, though.
That would be interesting.
That's taking that kind of stereotypical sci-fi trope of the sort of strange entity invading women's bedrooms at night and just turning it on its head. And I think that would be quite, I've never seen that done. And I think that would be a really interesting take on the idea, because it's not being done. And like, how would a male respond to that? and how would an audience respond to that? I think that's quite an interesting little twist.
Okay, so what they would do if there was focus on a male character, especially 90s TV, they wouldn't actually focus on the male character. They'd have him being the recipient, but they'd have a physical representation of the female ghost. And that's what they'll call the camera would not be on the male character. It would be on the ghost, the female ghost. That's what I'd think that'd happen, especially in the 80s, 90s and stuff like that.
But they'd be naked.
They'd be in granny nightwear. That's all they'd be in. You know. But that's what would happen.
Airbrush green smoke, you know.
With green smoke. Yeah, so
on that note, are we about ready to decide how many candle lights out of five? Sookie's got one.
I've just got a couple more because
I did interrupt you, Sookie. Go for it.
Was the actress that played for Lisa Howard, Ellen?
You know, she lived to 100.
Thanks a lot for that, Deb. 101. She lived to 101.
It was the ghost candle.
You did have a happy life, by the sounds of it. Sub Rosa. Sub Rosa, the Latin translation is under the rose. That explains all the roses probably all around the place. And there is a continuity error where Beverly and Troy walk away at the beginning of the episode, and then Picard has his little wander around the graveyard with the governor. And then you see, for some reason, Troy's at the background again, walking around the background. Right, so there was a bit of a continuity here to where she should have been with her, Beverly. Other than that is the end of my notes.
Tim had something to say again.
It was just that remembering the title, and it may be stating the obvious to some, but the actual phrase has a literal and a figurative meaning. I think it's in ecclesiastical life, in the churches, sub rosa, under the rose, meant a secret as confidential as the confessional. Because I believe the origin is that in some of the early churches, the confessional booths actually had carved roses over the door. So anything that was said under the rose was a secret to be taken to the grave.
Oh, see, now that puts a whole new twist on the whole thing with Felisa not telling Beverly about it.
Oh, sorry. Have we got to start again then?
No.
my apologies. I'll shut up.
No way.
No. It's fantastic, that is, by the way. Brilliant. Yeah.
How many lights you see?
Four lights!
I asked how many lights you see.
Right, let's get our lights out of five. So five is a spanking good night with Nana's sex diary. One is being stuck in the mist with Geordie. So, Becca, how many lights out of five would you give this?
Honestly, I'm still going to give it five. It's got issues. We acknowledge those issues. But it's still a fun episode to watch. And I love Gates. So, you know. Oh, shut up.
So we'll have Tim's vote as well.
what would you give it? Five glowing candles.
I would say it's an entertaining hour, but it's not one of the best. I'd give it a pleasant way to pass the time at a three, because you know me, all about the hard side.
A tiny perusal of Nana's erotic journals, but you're not going to dig into the.
Oh, we never did we? It's all left to the imagination.
Just have a peek.
Yeah.
He's the voyeur outside Beverly's cabin.
And while maybe...
aren't we all?
Also, 20-something me had a very active imagination. It wasn't a very well-targeted one.
Yeah, Sookie, lights out of five.
I am actually going to echo Tim, because I don't think it's a great episode, but it's not a bad episode neither. And I'm going to give it an extra point, 2-3, because it would have been 2-3 because of Gates McFadden's performance, and she is giving it her all in more ways than one. Thank you very much. 3.
Deb?
Honestly, I would have said 2, but for all the laughs it's given us and the conversation starters, I can't go above 3. Sorry, Becca.
All right, I'll forgive you.
I think I'm on team 3 as well, so
None of you can cosplay with me ever again.
Hold on, we ain't heard Drew. He might want to do five.
That leaves Drew the kind of...
I've still got me 90.
This is definitely not the worst episode of Star Trek. And I would never, ever avoid it like I would say something like Shades of Grey or bloody awful Code of Honour. I don't know. I'm like you, Deb. I don't know if I can give it more than 3, but yeah, let's give it a 4. I think it's entertainingly bad. Hilarious masterpiece. 4 out of 5.
So, enough about what we think. Let's find out what our listeners had to say about this episode.
Listeners feedback.
So this was a comment from Jennifer Lee Rossman, and they say, "I'm sorry, but I would not read my grandmother's erotic journals, nor would I sleep with an heirloom fornication spirit." I think if it wasn't her grandmother's hand-me-down sex ghost, the episode would get taken a lot more seriously. But that detail, unfortunately, makes it so weird and not in the normal Star Trek sense of the word. On the bright side, we get to hear Picard say, "vigorous libido." I saw a clip of Picard and Crusher walking down the hallway with absolutely no context. And before I even clicked on play, I knew it was from Sub Rosa because that was where he said vigorous libido. And I was right because it is so emotionally scarring, but in a good way.
Yeah, so I've got something from Dave K, who says Sub Rosa was one of about 20 TNG episodes I've only watched once on broadcast. So I've done a special second ever viewing just for you. Season 7 has the feeling of a production team desperately thinking outside the box for episode concepts. Some of those Season 7 episodes are amongst my favourite episodes of Trek, and some are terrible, like this one. As an episode, it noticeably lacks a B-plot, meaning the A-plot really drags trying to fill 44 minutes. There's some terrible performances. I'd be interested to hear what the women on the podcast think about the sexual politics on display here, but I found it all very cringe-inducing. Maybe I missed a point. The one saving grace is the time I spent wondering what would have happened if Ronan succeeded here, and his next stop was Wesley or Jack. 1 star for at least trying something different.
Okay, so next feedback is from Jack McMorrow, and they've got to say, Ronan is 34? Okay, I'm 35. And he looks like he's older than a tortoise's favourite oak tree. Then again, as we see in Picard, Beverly's son is supposed to be in his 20s but looks 40s. Hardly a tour de force in terms of performances from anyone, with how sparingly the regulars, except Gates McFadden, are used. Gates gives us an all-time great performance, and it is evident that she's trying to make this great. Tragically, this doesn't quite work out. Not too much I can recommend from Sub Rosa, but I'll say this episode is one of Star Trek's answers to The Room. It's just so infamous in terms of quality that you have to see it. Overall, does Sub Rosa deserve to be known as one of the worst? Not really. True, TNG Season 7 has a fair few entries where they are riding out the clock until they can make TNG movies, but this isn't anywhere near the show's nadir of quality. Not great, but talked about often in terms of ridicule. 2 proton packs out of 5. Unless you limit it to just the scene where Beverly and Ronan merge, then I give it a guess the faces of the species segment out of 5. And he goes on to say, P.S. here's a photo of me and a few Halloween ago as Dr. Crusher's nightmare.
Oh, that's a relief. I thought it was going to be his candle face.
Just for context, if you've not been listening to the podcast for that long or maybe missed the episode, once upon a time long ago, Bob decided we should have a segment on the podcast where you had to guess the feces of the species from a description. Let's just say it was canned very quickly.
I miss Bob.
He'll be back. So we got Murray Christensen. So we got Murray Christensen. Dave.
No, it was me interrupting you. I just thought it would be good to point out it was the Scottish perspective.
Okay, this is the Scottish. Yes, it is. So we've now got Murray Christensen, the Scottish perspective. And he says, some feedback for Subrowser. I'm getting annoyed that meme culture might be rehabilitating this episode, and I want it to stop. I will grudgingly admit that the idea of doing a ghost story in Star Trek is a nice idea. We will also have to deal with Planet Scotland. But Scotland imagined by someone who had seen the Scotland area of a fifth-tier theme park somewhere in North Texas. Basically, someone who saw some of Brigadoon once. As a Scottish person, it is just eye-rollingly bad. There is also the Dr. Crusher and the sexy girls part, with her loudly discussing her granny's erotic diaries with Troy, being a particularly odd scene. And I'm amazed that we now see some junior officer at the next table choke on their synth ale or something. So don't be drawn in by the funny internet tags. The episode isn't big or clever, just slightly uncomfortable and annoying. Thank you very much for that, Murray, who shall be on one of our episodes in the near future.
So I've got Jesse. Subrosa is one of my favourites because it represents Beverly as victim and addict to Ronan's energy. This was never a love story. He used love to manipulate her, to feed off her. But because of her love for Picard, she fought through the addiction and killed him. Beverly is a survivor.
Lion Trek has a four-pointer. They say, point one, it's really story about both violation and addiction. Two, its serious message is reduced because the idea of a green lamp ghost makes it comical. Three, Gates McFadden acts her butt off with the material given. And four, the aftermath is way too reduced.
I just thought it was worth reading out Philip Edney as well. Oh, no, I'm not sure I could handle watching it again. Life's too short.
Yes, I've got a bad Philip.
So I've got, he's already been name-checked once, the former host with the most, Mr. Bob Fleming, says, why I love TNG, a show that gets the space to explore individual characters. If not set in a sci-fi show, this would be run-of-the-mill sex love story, but TNG makes it so much more than that. A porn version of A Christmas Carol in space. It feels a bit like some really good fan fiction, probably written by Andrea or Deb. From what I remember, says Bob.
This wasn't my fan fiction.
My fan fiction was a crossover between Zhukov and Lorca, and with another element of another Jason Isaacs character as well. There was no sex involved at all. I'm very happy to share a link to my one and only fan fiction. But yes, it's a bit tied into being a Jason Isaacs fan.
So we've got a one-line bit of feedback from Cliff Shepherd, and they've got to say, Beverly, only time she got seduced, she should have been happy. That sounds very PC there, Cliff. Thanks very much for that.
Cliff's so good. Please do check out his book. We've got one from Dr. RDA, and they say, it seriously creeps me out when the word romantic is used in any connection to this episode. This is the story of abuse, showing that even strong women with social support can be victims. Even at the end of the episode, Beverly hasn't processed that it was abuse and not an unusual relationship. We also see another tragedy in Beverly's backstory. What were those nights with Nana, the candle and girl stories, but grooming the orphan girl for her turn to host? Ooh, that's an interesting take. Was she being groomed? Right, so it's followed up by Harmony. Now, Harmony has done a whole post which Devil read out, but she replied back to Dr. RDA. Exactly, there's no consent to random alien influence. And at that time, there was almost no trauma reprocessing in Trek.
And Harmony replied to that, it's chemical addiction, control and abuse, which so many people think is just a funny ghost sex. I did see that and respond at the time, and then Harmony responded to me, because it is an interesting take, as I wrote. I could see there is a coercion element. But, I mean, we've had good fun talking about this episode, and I looked at it again through those sort of, I hope I took it seriously what's been said and what Harmony was saying to the reply. What she said is, to each their own, it was to me a very general way of presenting addiction and withdrawal as a means of control and coercive trauma. The episode hits differently now than it may have done at the time or previous replies. It should be a good episode discussion. It certainly made me think about the episode differently in looking at it, and I think it had the potential to be that. And obviously, some people watching the episode, they may have been triggered with experience themselves or people that they know. So there is, I think we respect a serious perspective to it. I just think it was very badly done. And it was also needed the man to come in and rescue them at the end. So I'm sorry, I am going to appreciate that perspective, but as I said there, I still like the fact that it's a funny ghost story with an orgasmic candle.
Tim, you had your hand up there, mate.
I did. It was a thought that just occurred to me that you know, this mention of the non-consensual pleasure as a weapon, that reminded me. Now, this is going back a bit, but those of you, you know, I'm sure with all your Trek credentials, you're all familiar with the animated series. And you remember the episode Slave a Weapon, written by Larry Niven, who was an established sci-fi author in his own right. And it was a reskin of a story from his own known space universe. In that universe, he actually posited the idea of a weapon that functioned in exactly the same way. It didn't do any harm. And it was like the opposite of a neural lash. It stimulated the pleasure centers of the brain, which sounds like a good time until you realize that, yes, it can be used to bring someone through addiction into a state of complete enslavement. So, and this is the early 70s we're talking here, I think, he was writing. So he'd not only had the idea for the gadget, but he'd thought it through, the logical social consequences and how people would be tempted to abuse that kind of power, which is top drawer speculative sci-fi in my book.
And it could have been a fantastic episode. The idea isn't wrong, although the image of Scotland is. It was done very badly. But what you needed to make that really work as a single episode was to look at, I don't want to use terms like grooming, we're getting very dark now, but it was all done very quickly and very badly. As time, apart from, and the only bit that really shocked me was the, oh well, yeah, but at least Granny was happy. And you think, oh, really?
I mean, I think though, again, and obviously this, I appreciate everybody's opinion and the people who can see things in the episodes that we might not be able to see. But I also think that some people need to not look at episodes that were made in the 90s with a 2024 lens. Like, I know, you know, because in the 90s, this was acceptable. It may not have been right. Like, I'm not saying it was right, but it was acceptable, you know, to have the damsel in distress with the big strong man coming to her rescue, or to have it be a bit silly, even though it was also serious. And so I do think that some people, and, you know, especially maybe even like younger people who might not have been around when this was first aired, don't, you know, they view it with a modern lens, which you can't do when you're watching sci-fi from the 80s and 90s.
The damsel in distress, I don't see it in this episode, really. I mean, I understand Picard coming and having words with Beverly, but he's incapacitated in it. He's knocked out. And it's Beverly that uses her own mind, her training to kick in, and she's the one that goes after Ronin. She's the one that resolves the situation by destroying the candle and then destroying Ronin.
But so her training didn't kick in until Picard showed up.
Only after Picard had already been
knocked
out.
More than willing to give up her entire life for this, you know, ghost until Picard showed up, until it injured him. And then she was like, oh. So maybe not damsel in distress, but certainly still needed that man to push her through it.
It was the love for a man that managed to break her out. Love for Picard. We all know she loves Picard. She always did.
I know.
Bev for, what was it? Bev for Picard.
Oh, it was Picard needs Bev.
Ah, that's it. Picard needs Bev. And Bev needs Picard.
Yes. I mean, come on. Look at them. Look at them.
So, actually, there's someone else as well. You know, when she's having
I should point out that Bev has actually got her her Bev and Picard dolls down there snogging. There's nothing wrong with that.
So, I mean, look, they've done worse at conventions.
I know.
Grief, we don't want to get too graphic on this show. Bev has her first erotic dream. She doesn't know who Ronan looks like, does she? Not there and then.
No.
So who is she picturing? Is it Picard?
Of course.
Okay.
You, Suki.
Well, you know, I sometimes am that sort of thing. You know, women do sometimes see me in these erotic dreams occasionally. Right? Mm. It's usually as the chapter turns up at the door, say, oh, you need your washing machine fixed? And they go, yes. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
So, on that note, I think that brings us around to the part of the show where we identify the red shirt of the week and then decide their fate.
I woke up this morning, put on my red shirt. Oh,
I'm going to go first to Deb, who is adamant she's not going to nominate Suki.
Oh, right. I'm not. I thought you were going to nominate me again.
No.
One day I will nominate you back, but not today, because I'm nominating Drew, because you've got a mask of Jason Isaacs behind you with a pin through its forehead.
Yeah, the eyes are a bit creepy.
I have, yes.
It's traumatizing. I'm gonna have dreams, but unfortunately they're not going to be like Beverly's.
Now,
definitely,
I was gonna nominate Drew because I've been hosting this week and he's just dropped some one-liners in that have made it very hard for us to stop laughing and recover and get over. But I did consider nominating Drew for that, but I'm gonna nominate Tim for just popping in as a surprise extra guest. And making me feel really, really, really thick. What that does mean is, Tim, you are going to have to come back on the show because we need those insights, but I'm still red-shirting you. Becca, who would you like to nominate as your red shirt?
Oh, God, I don't know. I don't know. Actually, yeah, sorry, honey. For interrupting.
What was a good interruption.
I
put my hand up.
It was a good interruption.
Who are you going to nominate and why? Is it Deb?
Me? Well, I was. Ah, dear. I was not going to think about nominating Deb, but now I've decided I am actually going to nominate Becca. Right? Because. Now, understand, Becca, this is your podcast and you can control your other half there for popping in all the while. Now, I understand this. You're both in the same room. He needs to be there just to make sure you get doing this. You know, having a man there to explain everything for you. But you couldn't have controlled him better, couldn't you? You could have told Saldi to leave the room. So I'm nominating you, Becca.
Okay.
Oh, dear me. Terrible.
Drew.
Terrible guest. You'll never have me on again.
Sorry about that.
No, you can't come on. You just come on when Tim's on and you can go around interrupting him. Stick hands up behind his head, V signs and everything like he was doing. Oh, dude.
I was putting my hand up.
I think you need to decide people's fates here.
Yeah, I was going to do the same reason as you, Andrea. I was going to vote for Tim as well. Far too highbrow conversation for us, putting us to shame, unfortunately. Please don't come on again, okay? Only joking. We'd love you back.
Yeah.
Right. I think that means that our red shirt for the week is, in fact, Tim. But I think since we've nominated him, I think he should at least have his chance to try and save himself by nominating one of us.
He can't save himself. He's already got three votes.
Oh, that's it, isn't it? Yeah, I think it would just be, you know, petty and small-minded to just, you know, to spit defiance like Captain Ahab as the boat goes down. That's just not, no. Okay. I've no idea what's involved. I've no idea what I've
just... We've got to decide your fate, but I saw the way you looked at Becca then. We know who would have... Yes, we know where your vote was going.
Yes.
So, Tim's our red shirt of the week. We need to decide his red shirt fate. Any suggestions?
It's got to involve the green false lightning, surely.
The candle, erotic passages.
Zombie Nana.
You know, this will be the male equivalent of the Beverly story that we were discussing earlier. So we can actually film it as well. If we can find out what happens. Fantastic. So
Sub Rosa 2, Nana comes back and seduces Picard.
Yeah, it's revenge.
Fatal orgasms from Nana Zombie.
You know, in the Picard season, no one said it might be Nana coming back as the villain, did they?
No.
Season 3.
We'll have to start that if they do a film. It's going to be about Zombie Nana.
Okay, that could be scary. I work nights and I drive. That kind of distraction at 3 a.m. could be fatal.
If you see green lights coming, no.
Well, normally, if I see green lights, it means something's going right for a change. But
So on that note, thank you for joining us. Thank you to Becca and Tim for being our guests. And thank you all for listening. We'll be back very soon until some new Trek hits our screens. We're going to be looking at some and reviewing some retro episodes. I think we're allowed to call things from the 90s retro now, which makes me feel really old. So there'll be more of this coming up until we get to Discovery Season 5 and got some new stuff to look at. So it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from the rest of the crew.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Lighters.
God, I feel like I haven't hosted for so long.
We seem to have lost Rebecca by looks of it. She's giggling away at some.
I'm just reading these, and they're just making me crack up.
Already, Rebecca's going to be one of my favourite guests.
Yay!